The big story in Parshat Shelach is the story of the spies. The people are nearing the land of Canaan, and Moshe sends ahead men, one from each tribe, to cross the border, check things out, and then bring back a report. So they head out for 40 days, return safely, and at first, all seems well. They confirm that the land, as promised, flows with milk and honey. But then the conversation turns. They begin to spill out all kinds of fears. The cities are fortified, the people are gigantic, and the land devours its inhabitants. And the people begin to panic, screaming and crying and saying they want to go back to Egypt. They even threaten to throw stones at anyone who tries to calm them down. God gets angry, for they seem to have lost all faith. They don't believe that God will protect them. They don't trust their leaders, and worst of all, they have disparaged the land of their ancestors, the land that God has promised them. It's one of the great tragedies of the Torah, a transgression so egregious that the punishment will be 40 years of wandering in the desert. This is what becomes known as Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies. The characters in this episode are referred to as Meraglim, spies, from at least the time of the Mishnah. Later Midrashim continue that usage. The Tanchuma on Parshat Shelach, for example, says that HaMeraglim ba'u ve'amru lashon hara al ha'aretz. The spies came back and spoke ill of the land. But the strange thing is, here in Parshat Shelach, they are never actually called spies. Nor is their expedition referred to as spying. Not once. From the start, they are always told to scout out the land. Vayuturu et Eretz Canaan. The Torah then repeats that language when Moshe sends them out, again when they actually go, and again when they describe their journey. The Parsha only ever refers to them as Hatarim, the scouts. Now, we might suggest that spies and scouts are basically the same thing. But although it's true that these words can describe similar activities, in both Hebrew and English, they have different connotations. To scout out, latur, is just to look around, to survey the land. To spy, leragel, is to do something devious, and presumably to stand in an adversarial relationship with those one is spying on. But even if we were to gloss over this difference in meaning, the question remains, where do our commentators get this language of spies, meraglim, if the Torah itself doesn't use it? How did this incident come to be known as Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies? The first hint at an answer comes in the way their report is described. Vayotziu dibat haaretz asher taru ota. Thus they produced bad reports about the land that they had scouted. The term for bad reports here, diba, stands out. It's repeated two more times in this story, but it is an unusual word. In fact, it is only used in one other place in the Torah, as the Ibn Ezra points out in his explanation of its meaning. Vayotziu dibat haaretz, they produced bad reports. That is, devar shelo haya, a thing which never happened. Ve'ein kein ve'yaveh Yosef, but that was not the case when Yosef brought bad reports. So, first of all, the Ibn Ezra is suggesting that the bad reports here in our Parsha were not just bad, they were false. And perhaps that was the truly sinful act that warranted such severe punishment. But he also draws a contrast to this diba from the other usage of the word in the Yosef story, back in Genesis, where we read that Vayave Yosef et dibatam ra'ah el avihem. Yosef brought terribly bad reports about his brothers to their father. This is at the beginning of the Yosef narrative, and it's the first indication we have of the deep rift that will exist between Yosef and his brothers. Soon enough, there will be other terrible conflicts between the brothers. They grow to hate him, we are told, and eventually they will capture him and sell him into slavery. But the tension all started with these bad reports. Now that we have established a unique linguistic connection between our scouts and Yosef, we can begin to notice other similarities between the two stories. There are 12 brothers, 10 of whom are united in their mission to seek out food, and 2 who are not, Yosef, who is already in Egypt, and Binyamin, who stays behind. And there are 12 men sent to survey the land, who also bring back food, 10 of whom are united in their report, and 2 who dissent. Yosef is sent out by his father to check on them, Eshlachacha Alehem, just as Moshe sends the men out to check on the land, Vayishlachotam. And in both stories, there is a signaling towards the land of Egypt. The scouts call for a return to Egypt. The brothers sell Yosef down to Egypt. The most incredible parallel, however, does not come until much later in the dramatic Yosef narrative. After he has served as a slave in Egypt, been thrown into prison for a crime he did not commit, risen to fame as a dream interpreter, and placed as second in command of all of Egypt during its years of famine. Yosef has wisely stored up grain for the lean years, and hungry people are now flocking to Egypt from all over, seeking sustenance, including, eventually, his brothers. They come down at their father's behest to bring food back to the family. But when they're finally standing before their brother Yosef, though he recognizes them, they do not recognize him. So they tell their sob story and ask Yosef for help. But his reaction is as surprising as it is harsh. Vayizkor Yosef et ha-chalamot asher chalam lahem. Recalling the dreams that he had dreamed about them, Yosef said to them, Meraglim atem, you are spies. You have come to see the secrets of the land. Spies, he calls them. It's not entirely clear why he chooses that word, nor what the accusation has to do with the dreams he had. But whatever his reasons, Yosef is fixated on calling them spies. He does so 2 more times before the scene is over. First, the brothers deny the charge, saying, Kenim anachnu, lo hayu avadecha meraglim. We are honest men. Your servants have never been spies. And Yosef repeats, Hu asher dibarti aleichem lemor meraglim atem. It is as I have told you, you are spies. And then finally, he suggests a test. Shilchu michem echad, let one of you go and bring your youngest brother, while the rest of you remain confined, so that your words may be put to the test to see the truth is with you. Otherwise, by the life of Pharaoh, meraglim atem, you are spies. You are spies, you are spies, you are spies. Yosef keeps repeating it. And what he means to suggest by it, above all, is that they are liars. He knows, after all, that they are almost certainly not actual spies. But either he believes that they are still hiding something, or he wants them to think he does. They claim to be honest, and he responds with the same charge. No, you are spies. Now, we started off with a story popularly known as The Sin of the Spies, but that never actually used the word spies. Yet we found another word in that story that linked it to the tale of Yosef and his brothers. And now we find that earlier narrative does use the word spies, quite a lot. In fact, it is the only place in the Torah where anyone is actually called a spy at all. Our rabbis were surely familiar enough with the language of the Torah to know this. It must be, then, that when they began to call the scouts spies in their midrashim, they were knowingly importing language from the Yosef story. They wanted us to read the account of the scouts suspiciously, to regard them with the same mistrust that Yosef showed his brothers. As that terminology began to stick more and more, the classical commentaries were framing the latter story in the themes of the earlier one, even referring to the story in our Parsha with words that Yosef was the first to utter. Now, it is true that outside of the Yosef story, no one in the Torah is ever explicitly called a spy. Yet, there is one description of the events in Parsha Chelach that comes fairly close. It's much later on, in Deuteronomy, when Moshe is recounting the scouting expedition to the next generation. And he says, Vayifnu v'yalu hahara v'yavo ad nachal eshkol v'yiraglu ota. They turned and went up into the mountains, and they came to Wadi Eshkol and spied it out. Now he says they spied it out? Why does Moshe suddenly change the language that he used in the Book of Numbers? He's the one who sent them to scout out the land, Vayiturota. Could it be that looking back, he remembers the story differently? Upon reflection, he now thinks they were lying all along. They were never just scouting out the land to bring back information. They were working with a hidden agenda from the start. Or, perhaps, Moshe was influenced by the Yosef story as well. As Moshe begins to recall the day his scouts came back from the land and gave their bad report, and all the tragedy that ensued, he can't help but think of an earlier story of bad reports that led to mistrust and tragedy. So, Moshe borrows, consciously or unconsciously, the language from that earlier tale. Moshe is now rereading his own life through the stories of his ancestors. In that sense, Moshe becomes the first Midrashist, drawing linguistic connections between the stories of his people across generations in order to uncover themes that have been running throughout their history. And so, Moshe is teaching us, too, not only how to read the Torah, but also how to read the Torah into our lives.